How do you like your tea? Cream? Sugar? Or do you want me to pee in it?
You're a class act, Carissa.
Hello, I'm Mike.
I'm Mike.
I'm Lindsay.
And this is the Forgotten Failures podcast. On this episode, we are, again, talking about a movie that has been largely forgotten and is, at the moment, not in print on DVD. It's a movie called Society from 1989. Not the movie Dead Poets Society from 1989. This is not educational in the least. Does not have Robin Williams in it.
No.
And it was released 3 years later in America under the title Society, after being released in Europe, where they understand movies like this, apparently, better than we do here.
Ooh, does it have a better rating over in Europe, I wonder?
Probably. It won Best Special Effects at the Brussels International Film Festival or something like that.
I'm not going to argue with the special effects.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
It's all about special effects.
It is. It's a special effects vehicle.
Yeah, it's like the zombie movies of 89.
So before mentioning anybody else in the cast, I want to mention Screaming Mad George, a Japanese-American artist who is credited with the surrealistic makeup effects in this movie. And he also worked on various reanimator-type movies. And in this movie, it's not so much about gore effects as it is about just effects.
Yeah, very bizarre.
That's really the only thing this movie is about, is effects.
Yeah. Well, it also has social commentary.
It's slight.
Yeah, so it reminded me kind of Zardoz, but I'll get to that later.
Describe the plot. Yeah, let's just run through this plot real quick. Get it out of the way.
Okay. So we start with in medias res. Billy, the guy who is our star, played by another guy named Billy Warlock. Now, this is not his real name, but he is actually the son of a guy named Dick Warlock, who was apparently Kurt Russell's stunt double for over 25 years under the pseudonym Dick Warlock. So his sons Billy Warlock and Lance Warlock also used the pseudonym Warlock. So we start out with him in a creepy house, walking around with a knife. And then, we don't know what he's going to do with it. And then we go to the credits. And the credits are a very creepy rendition of the Eton Booting song, one of the very first alma maters for a British school, sung a cappella by what sounds like a castrato, over a weird expanse of what appeared to be a pile of writhing bodies, as described in the famous Cards Against Humanity card.
Very slimy bodies.
It's
like they all took a bath in mineral oil.
Yeah. It's like some sort of a gorgeous ladies of wrestling scenario. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the people seem to be oldish men.
Yeah, it was very bizarre.
These credits go on and on and on and on. And then a smash cut to Billy at his psychiatrist. He grabs what appears to be an onion out of a fruit bowl and tells the psychiatrist that his life is a nightmare. So then back to him playing basketball with another guy. He's playing basketball with his friend Milo, right?
Mm-hmm. And yes, then, Milo.
Yes, and then a sweaty guy named David Blanchard drives up, who has apparently been pestering Billy's sister Jenny. Billy's sister Jenny has the Molly Ringwald haircut, except that it's blonde.
And just for the sake of making some visual impact here, Billy is wearing what a modern day hip hop video girl would wear. Yeah. They're both wearing uniforms.
Sleeveless t-shirt, wasn't it?
They're both wearing basketball uniforms.
No, he was wearing a long sleeve.
Yeah, they're both wearing jackets over their basketball.
And he's wearing booty shorts as well.
High socks.
With high socks. That is what a young girl today would wear to get into a rapper's
music video. It's like Hollerback Girl.
Yes,
exactly. A fly girl?
A fly girl. A modern fly girl would wear that.
Yeah, so they never get back to playing basketball again, although it turns out that he is the basketball star, and his license plate is the word hoops.
Hoops?
Yes. This guy David drives up, and apparently they're all trying to keep him away from Billy's sister Jenny, but then she's in the bathroom getting dressed, and then he pops out of the closet. How did he get in there? He tries to wrestle her to the floor while trying to reason to her somehow, and then he gets kicked out of the house.
It's not what it looks like.
It's not what it looks like. So he gets kicked out of the house, and then Billy zips up his sister and sees something weird on her back. I don't know what it was, but she asks.
Slime.
Yes. Yeah, I said it was damp. Then we get to a debate scene. This is one of many debates between Billy and a nerd over who should be the student body president at Beverly Hills Academy. Billy is the cool guy. The entire debate seems to center around the dress code, and he uses this as an excuse to make fun of the nerd's attire. And then after the debate, where he totally wins, he ends up talking to a psychiatrist again, right?
Yeah, he sees his psychiatrist pretty often.
Yeah. So after this debate, he goes to see a psychiatrist again. Then he goes to the beach with his girlfriend, Shauna.
Who is
your typical blonde character from a 1989 movie.
Cheerleader.
Yes. Yep. At one point, she wears a barrette that consists of a tiny pair of sunglasses right above her eyes, but holding her hair in place.
This is the 80s, guys.
Yeah, so he and her are at the beach. He rubs suntan lotion on her. And in the background, a couple kids are crawling around, and eventually they spray him with suntan lotion. And then he crawls after them. And then he falls at the feet of another hot babe, played by Devin DeVasquez.
So many hot babes.
Who was in one of the Andy Sedaris movies as the girlfriend of Eric Estrada, I seem to remember. Yeah, so she is a hot brunette babe who looks a lot older than him. Although he was 28 at the time.
Yeah.
Kind of looks youthful.
But they're in high school.
So yeah. Leonardo DiCaprio of 89.
Yeah.
She is wearing a high-waisted blue bikini with several straps.
Yep. Multiple straps.
Mm-hmm. And she then squirts him with the suntan lotion as well. And this is after his girlfriend got mad at him for not getting them invited to Ted Ferguson's party.
Mm-hmm.
Then the sweaty guy, who is always running around in a panic, David Blanchard, convinces him to come to the pier and plays a tape for him. This is cross-cut with his sister talking about her amazing coming-out party with other members of high society. So what's on this tape?
His sister and his parents are getting into a vehicle because that's where Blanchard hid the microphone.
Yeah, they're
and the sister's gushing about her coming out.
Yes,
and the parents go over what the coming out will entail.
I remember my own coming out. I was so excited.
Then you can do it with women as well as men.
Of course.
You know the schedule: first me dying, then copulation. Summon your own age first, then with your mother and me. Then, in comes the host.
Totally
completely
normal.
So Billy has had this sprung on him by his sweaty friend that his entire family is engaged in some sort of orgiastic cult. And so at first, as you might not be surprised to learn, he doesn't believe it. He tries to throw the tape into the ocean, but then he doesn't. He takes it to his psychiatrist, Dr. Cleveland, who is played by a Wallace Shawn type.
Yes.
Much taller than Wallace Shawn, but still basically Wallace Shawn. And the psychiatrist tells him to go away, come back the next day, and then when he comes back the next day, the tape is somehow different.
Yeah.
And just contains a very wholesome discussion of, you know, what fun they're going to have dancing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, instead of copulation, they use the word dine. Dining. Mm-hmm. Yes. First the dining.
Yeah. Dancing.
And dancing, that's dancing. What it was. You dance.
And safety first, they make sure that they buckle their seatbelts.
Yeah, and the part where her mother tells her, guys are going to pop high ones as soon as they see you. That is no longer on the tape at all.
Yeah, there was some commentary from the mom. Oh, your breasts are so gorgeous. Guys are going to pop high ones.
High ones.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I guess, is referring to erections.
Yes.
But I don't...
The hotter the chick, the higher the boner.
Either that or wheelies.
Yeah, or wheelies. So that she's coming out to the Rough Riders? Is that what you're saying?
It's gonna be DMX is all up in this bitch.
Oh, it's going to be like in the movie Torque. You know, masculinity is expressed by your motorcycle traveling at supersonic speeds on one or possibly zero wheels.
See, I just like the idea that men don't actually have small penises. Mm-hmm. Women are just too ugly.
Yeah.
To pop a high one.
Yeah,
on
that's
them.
Right.
You don't want to waste the penis.
The more gorgeous you are, the higher it pops.
Yeah, the higher the boner. The wiener gets, like, super big when it's a hot chick.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the psychiatrist says, what is wrong with you, Billy? You can't tape your family. And then one of multiple times he says, I really hate giving you drugs, Billy. And then gives him some drugs. And then Billy runs away. And Billy calls Blanchard and says, Blanchard, you got to give me another copy of that tape. And then he immediately leaves the psychiatrist's office and finds that Blanchard has died in a terrible car accident.
It's not really seen.
His gigantic van has been flipped somehow.
Yeah. Just somehow.
And what was the license plate to his van?
Ear.
E-A-R.
E-A-R. At first I thought it said fear, and I was like, oh, that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Nope.
But no, just ear.
Just ear.
It's even
weirder. It's even weirder.
Yeah.
He wanted the license plate ear, because he's the microphone guy.
He's always recording
things. He's the guy with the microphones.
He's the ears.
He's the ear. He's like, it's like Gene Hackman in The Conversation. So, after that, he runs back to his house. He's always running back and forth between his house and everywhere else. It seems like...
manic. Yeah. He is frantic the entire time. Mm-hmm.
Well, he's got a big van that doesn't go that fast. It's probably quicker to run.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Billy has a Jeep Wrangler.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
So he gets back to his parents' house, and he finds out that he's been invited to a party at Ted the Tycoon Ferguson's house. Now, Ted Ferguson is his sister's beau.
I'm sorry, he was invited? He received a telegram.
He got a telegram. Yes, this is...
It was a telegram.
No, telegram.
Telegram.
I saw no evidence that this movie was set in any year other than 1989, but they're communicating by telegrams.
Yep.
Well, Billy, we need to talk. I guess you got my telegram.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's like the... I think the movie Metropolitan was also made in 1989, and that depicts a world of debutante balls. And then you realize, in 1989, there were debutante balls in New York City, and like 5 years later, there weren't. I don't know if that was a generational change for some reason, or it was the Clinton administration, but it's hard to believe at this point that in 1989, there were lots of debutante balls in New York City. Apparently, it was the same way with telegrams in Beverly Hills. Mm-hmm. So he ends up going to this party, after being invited via telegram. And there he meets the brunette again, who turns out her name is Clarissa. Although I think sometimes they call her Carissa.
Yeah.
And I think her name is like Clarissa Clavin or Clarissa Karen or something.
Yeah, I think it was like Clarissa Karen.
It's a tongue twister.
It was a weird name.
So she basically looks like Vanity from the Prince movies.
Yes.
Yeah, she's dressed that way. She has the same hair.
She does not explain at all.
She's not seemed to fit into high society because she kind of looks trashy, you know.
Yeah.
But they all like her. He's being friendly with her, but then his buddy Milo shows up and confronts her and accuses her of turning tricks. And then she runs off in a huff into a tent. And then Billy follows her into the tent. And what does he find there? Ted the Tycoon Ferguson and all his cronies, including the nerd.
Yeah.
Who
was in a debate with Billy.
That's right.
They're running against president, I guess?
Turns out he's not just a hapless nerd. He's a sinister nerd.
Yeah.
So they end up in the tent. And then Ted tells him, like, we're part of a huge conspiracy. At these cotillion balls, we all have sex with each other, and we're going to kill you. Yeah, I don't know why he revealed all that information.
No, and I totally had sex with your sister.
Yes.
I had sex with your sister, and it was so hot, everybody else jumped in.
Yeah.
Which...
So that's the sort of thing you tell somebody right before you kill them. But instead of killing them, what did he do?
Pushes them into a pool.
Yeah, he threw them into a pool.
Well, he took them in like a loving sort of like intimate embrace. Like he took them in his hands and almost looked like he was going to kiss them for a second.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then he ended up pushing him into a pool.
And Billy did kind of a backwards swan dive. So he went
into
the pool pretty well. He really arced his back.
Yeah.
So this is after telling him, you make waves, you're going to drown. That throws him in the pool.
That was a good line.
But he did not drown.
That is a good line.
He did not drown. So then Carissa, the trashy brunette, takes him to her mansion and says things like,
mean machine, Jelly Bean. Try to run now.
Oh no, as he gets out of the pool though, he's soaking wet, and she
That's
comes
right.
over, and she very coyly says, wet dreams. Which makes no sense, other than he's wet, and wet dream means ejaculate.
And then she points out that he's in danger of losing one of the buttons on his shirt, and then she pulls it off.
Yeah.
And then they go to her house, and they have a big sex scene.
A big sex scene.
It was very long.
Yeah,
very little sex.
Yeah.
Very little sex happened.
Yeah.
But it took so long.
Yeah, she was a Playboy playmate.
Oh, was she?
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that
which is how she ended up in the Andy Sedaris movies.
Mm-hmm.
So she provides the toplessness in the movie.
She did.
So during their sex scene, he notices that her arm seems to be coming from behind her back somehow.
Yeah, it almost looks like a third person is getting in on it.
Yeah,
and you're like, ooh, threesome. And then, no, it's just her.
No, and then he jumps off of the bed and finds that her body is contorted somehow. And she is just grinning with a happy smile on her face. And she does not know what the problem is. And at the same time, his ex-girlfriend, Shauna, is sitting in a car with a friend. And they're just talking about what a bitch this Clarissa is.
Yeah, sitting out in front of Clarissa's home.
Yeah.
Because the friend, who's a good friend...
I think she was Asian.
She saw Billy at the party and Clarissa, and then went and grabbed the ex-girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Brought her over and is like, Billy's in there with her right now. She's such a bitch.
Yeah.
But you can tell that she's just kind of instigating everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's like, can you believe this, Shauna?
Yeah.
Wow, what a bitch.
Yeah.
This is so interesting.
And for really no reason. It's not like a subplot or anything at all.
Yeah, and then cut back to Clarissa's house in her room. They seem to be waking up in the morning. And she says, how do you want your tea? Cream? Sugar? Or do you want me to pee in it?
Not a joke, though.
Seriously, do you want me to pee in your tea?
Yeah.
Yeah. So she is kind of a character who bridges the gap of society and normal people. Like.
I guess.
Yeah.
So that's the sort of thing you would normally say to somebody who was in high society with you.
You'd pee maybe that's in what their
they
tea?
Do. They maybe know. They drink the pee
that's
tea.
That's true.
They do
and
all kinds
she
of
was
weird
testing
stuff.
Him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was trying to explain it all. Clarissa
and I think somebody barges into her room, and it turns out to be Clarissa's mother,
who he had previously ran into at the beach.
At the beach.
He literally ran into her,
yes,
into her breast.
Yeah, this is Clarissa's mother is a giant woman,
yes,
played by giant actress Pamela Matheson, who also played the Swedish woman who picks Steve Martin up at one point in Father of the Bride, and she does not look human in this movie. Every other member of society does, but she does.
Yeah, she looks a little bit dead. She looks like To me, she looked like Rebel Wilson.
Really?
If she was cast
like 6.5 feet tall.
Yeah, if she was 6.5 feet tall and cast in a John Waters film.
Yeah, really
about
John
about women who had lobotomies.
Yes,
basically that's what she was.
Yeah, she had a blank look on her face.
Yeah, she had a blank look. She was very sort of animalistic, dumb.
Now, she kind of provides the clue that the members of high society may actually be aliens because she kind of looks like one of those Rexico Cortico. What are they called? From the Doctor Who series. The, like, big, fat, lizard-like creatures who kind of squeeze into human bodies.
Yeah.
She was the only one who, like, provided a clue as to looking like an alien.
Yeah, she provided the weirdness.
Yes.
Like, everybody else acted very, like, while they did weird things, they acted very normal.
Yeah, they were trying to, they were putting on airs. They were very much like,
very
we're a part of this.
But she was very odd the entire time.
Yeah, I thought there was going to be some explanation about how, like, she was, like, half alien and half something else.
Yeah, I was thinking
that
same thing. Or, like, she got, maybe she was shunned, and they brainwashed her or something.
Oh, yeah, she
they brainwashed
was
her.
And
that's right, it's
like,
unclear. It's
we can't have you anymore.
Yeah, they just shunted her brain.
Or maybe it's like, what was her name, Rose Kennedy, the Kennedy's sister who was getting
she was too wily.
So maybe she got the like alien equivalent of a lobotomy, and that's how she ended up. Because that's what they do in high society.
That
it's definitely possible.
Too wild. Mm-hmm. Got too many ideas.
She got ideas above her station. Yeah, at this point, she also hands him a hairball. This is something that would have made sense if this was a Japanese movie. That's the sort of thing you would expect. Just random people doing random stuff.
Yeah, because at this
point,
like, there's
vaguely
nothing
symbolic.
Yeah, she has like a little bit of hair in her mouth when she shows up. The mom.
Yeah.
Billy's trying to introduce himself by reaching his hand out, saying, hi, this is whoever, I'm Billy. She then coughs into her hand for a while, and then goes to shake his hand, and there's just more hair in her hand.
And why Billy keeps his hand out there?
Like, for a while.
But she's like hacking something up into her hand, and he's still like, I'm still going to shake her hand. That's
like, this is his inroad into high society.
He's trying to make a good impression.
A fence that he is actually already in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this at this point, he runs away, runs back to his house again, finds a blow-up doll in his car. Then Shauna walks up in a denim dress, throws the ring he gave her on the ground. There's no explanation for the blow-up doll at this point. She didn't put it there. His parents didn't put it there. But and yet, he carries the blow-up doll into his parents' bedroom to confront them.
His
and
parents' bedroom,
His parents' bedroom, his parents are basically giving his sister an erotic massage.
Yeah, kind of looked like he was humping her back. The dad,
and the entire time throughout this movie, from the very beginning, the relationship that the daughter has with the parents is very sexual in nature.
Yes.
Even when they're just talking to each other, they all talk to each other like lovers.
Yeah.
It's very gross the entire time.
Yeah,
very creepy.
And Billy knows that they do it with each other because he mentions incest pretty early on. He knows that they have sex with each other.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like he's been worried.
That's the least weird thing to him about his family.
Yeah, it seems like something he should have realized, like, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But somehow this movie covers the period during which he realizes everything all at once. Yeah, so this scene where he confronts his parents ends with him saying to his dad,
"Fuck you, butthead."
Fuck you, butthhead.
Yeah.
Which is really great if you don't want to curse too much.
Yeah,
just enough.
It's like, I want to push it just far enough.
Yeah.
Cut to the sweaty guy's funeral.
Yeah.
They look at him in the casket. They say, this doesn't, well, he looks weird. Maybe he's not a real corpse at all.
Yeah.
And then the nerd tells him to meet him at the canyon where he'll give him a secret. So he goes to the canyon and he probably walks down a hill, down an incline, down a ravine, down some sort of canyon. Then he finds the nerd's corpse in a car. Then he falls down. Then Ted Ferguson catches him and then throws him down. He sees a handkerchief and then Ted immediately grabs the handkerchief again and runs away. I think we're not supposed to know that it's Ted Ferguson.
Yeah. No, not at that point, because he's masked, or he has, like, black...
Yeah,
it's
blackface. Case,
blackface. He was
blackface.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where he was wearing blackface, like, shoe polish on it?
Yeah.
Al Jolson?
Yep.
Oh, I didn't notice that. Okay, so...
Well, it was all very dark. Everything was very dark, but his face was painted.
So, yeah, he grabs the handkerchief, and then he goes back, and then they have another debate. Another student council debate, and at this time he explains that the nerd is not there. Everybody in the audience gasps. They can't believe the nerd's not there.
Yeah.
Then he explains that this is because the nerd is dead. And then they all laugh, because actually the nerd is standing right behind him with his briefcase, saying, did I miss something? I'm sorry, I had some car trouble.
Yeah.
And I think even, like, that's a sly, point to his neck.
He does rub his neck a little bit.
Yeah, because he had apparently had his throat slit while he was lying in the car there.
Yeah.
But this was all the great makeup effects of Screaming Mad George, who also exists in this world, and he's hired by the rich people to
that was
fake
a good
the
effect.
Deaths.
Yeah,
of
which
other
looking
rich
back, it kind of makes sense because when they showed it, I was like, "That's really cheesy looking." The blood was just like pouring out. It looked like fruit juice.
Yeah,
But when, after hearing it back and he's not dead, obviously, he's like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, they were faking it. Yeah. Like, they wouldn't do it that well. Yeah.
So then, he is completely embarrassed at the debate. They're all laughing and slapping their knees in the audience. Ted Ferguson is waving the handkerchief around that he found as a clue. And then Milo explains to him that he was watching the whole thing.
I saw Petrie and Ferguson coming out of the woods. Petrie was wrapped in a blanket. And then some old station wagon showed up. Then an old Ford. The whole thing was weird.
Weird.
So then he runs back to his house again. He's immediately grabbed and sedated. Dr. Cleveland tells him that he doesn't like giving him drugs again. He gives him more drugs. He ends up being taken to the hospital. Milo falls into the hospital. And then he asks the nurse where Billy can be found. She doesn't know what to make of it. She doesn't tell him anything. And then he starts running around and finds Billy. And then she says, oh, didn't I tell you? Billy's supposed to be in the morgue. You need to go to the morgue. Are you a family member? Okay, you can't go to the morgue. And then he says several incarnations of the word no. Now, could each of us, like, give our interpretation of, like, what he said there?
Yeah, sure. I can try to do it.
I think it was kind of like, no, 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 no.
I think it was more like, no, 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 no.
Yeah, he definitely hit a lot.
Yeah, there was like, there was
no,
like,
no, no, no,
no, no. Like, he was like saying no, he was saying a sentence. It was structured as a sentence, yeah. But he just kept repeating no. Like, there was.
Yeah. No, 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 no.
Yeah.
No.
No, no, like, no, like, no, no.
I feel like the actor and the director had kind of a conflict about this. And he was like, I just want to say no.
Yeah.
And he said no, and the director was like, waving his arm around in a rent, like in a circular motion. Or maybe, like, you gotta say no a few more times.
Maybe the director was moving it as though he should say no for longer, and he just misread it.
Yeah.
He's like, no, you should just hold the no. And he's like, so say as many no's as I can within 4 seconds.
Yeah, that's good. So then he wakes up in his hospital bed, after basically hallucinating everything that's happened in the movie to this point.
Mm-hmm.
And then he runs out of the hospital, gets back into the car. He has become weirdly confident now. Mm-hmm. He seems to be turning into Joe Piscopo.
He turned New Yorkie.
Sweaty. Yeah, sweaty New York guy.
He's becoming, like everybody who learns the truth about these people gets all sweaty.
He became, like, he was manic in the beginning, and then he became super manic.
Yeah, and I was like, I'm alive! I beat him! They couldn't handle Whitney the Wonder Boy!
Yeah, but then he's still paranoid.
So he drives off and leaves Milo behind for the 50th time.
But he's
Milo
like,
has to chase him back.
But he's like, come with me, and then he drives off.
Yeah.
Well, this is Beverly Hills. Nobody, you know, everybody just drives their own car all the
time. That's true. No one rides together. No one
carpools. So Milo is basically a punk. You know, he wears a jacket with some patches on it, but he also drives a
BMW
convertible,
yeah.
So Milo drives back to him, he goes back to his house again. This time he's actually carrying a knife. Mm-hmm. So this is finally what we saw before the opening credits. He's got this knife, and he creeps around the house for a while, and then he says, Mom, Dad, I need to have a little chat with you. And then it turns out there's about a million other people in the room with his mom and dad, and they use one of those stiff poles to put a wire around his neck, like they used to catch rabid dogs.
Or an alligator.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. These are
raccoon.
Yeah.
Raccoon.
Yeah. Just the thing that you would use to catch a wild animal.
Yeah.
Like a feral animal.
Yeah. What are those things are called? It's like a loop on the end of a long pole. And you
animal control pole.
Yeah. And then you put you tighten the loop once you get it around the person's head by pulling it through the pole, which is like 6 or 8 feet long. So he is restrained using this pole thing. Then we get to the, basically the last half hour of the movie is just this lengthy, a weird scene involving shunting.
Yeah, which we probably should have explained earlier on.
They didn't explain
we didn't know what it was until just now anyways.
Yeah, because at this point, Dr. Cleveland, who at one point was his closest confidant, this is the psychiatrist played by
who's
the
been trying
Wallace
to gain
Shawn.
His trust. Like, that's he's right. been yeah. very actively
you
trying
still
to gain
don't
his trust.
Trust me. That question popped up a lot.
Yeah, so Dr. Cleveland explains the whole thing to him. He says, we're an evolved species. We're a different species than you. Billy says, alien scum. And he says, no, we're not aliens. We've been here a long time. We've just evolved differently from you. Don't you understand it? And then he says, alien scum, again. And then he tries to explain that this is one of the many, many instances where this is clearly an allegory of the rich and the poor.
Yes.
So at this point, Dr. Cleveland actually explains, this is an allegory of the rich and the poor, Billy. Don't you know that for years and years, the rich have fed off the poor?
Sucked off. That was the actual word. Sucked off the poor. Which is, I really love to think that he meant that literally. Like, the rich guys go and suck off poor guys.
Well, that was the kind of thing you heard of happening, you know, in certain neighborhoods in New York City.
It does happen.
Like the movie Cruising.
It does happen.
Yeah, the rich guys had to do it in secrecy, but the poor guys, this was their whole life. Anyway, we're getting off track. So eventually, he says that I love shunting.
Well, they bring
it's time for shunting. We don't know what shunting is at this point.
The judge comes out, too. too, because the judge is like a big dude. Everybody talks about, oh, the judge is going to be there. The judge,
always has a cigar. He looks like the psychiatrist, except he has a cigar.
And the judge says, I love the thrill of the hunt and the taste of the shunt.
Taste of the shunt.
And at that point, I was like, what the
Everyone was like, what is shunting? Well, shunt is like a short tube.
That's what I thought it was. I was like, yeah, shunt is like a tube.
Well, it's used in medicine.
I know that,
To inject something into a blood vessel over and over again.
But I couldn't, like, figure out what, why would you taste a shunt? How, in what way would you taste a shunt?
Oh, we find out.
And I try to look it up, and obviously it doesn't exist, because they, this is a made-up thing for this movie.
Yeah, so at this point, they bring in David Blanchard, the sweaty guy who uncovered the secret earlier, and they start stripping him down, and everyone else starts stripping down, and grinning like a bunch of mad men and women.
And secreting.
Yes.
Secreting
mucus or ooze.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then rubbing it all over themselves.
But they don't strip all the way down. They wear underwear. Yeah.
They've got class.
So this is not a scene involving gore. It's not a scene involving nudity, but it's still a really bizarre scene.
Yeah. Because it's very, everything's very wet.
Gross special
creepy
effects.
And slimy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So their faces basically become weird snouts that are attached to this guy that they're feeding off.
Kind of like an anteater type.
Yeah.
Like they just extend.
Kind of like the guy from Mac and Me. You know, the alien.
Yeah.
He has a big snout.
Yeah.
And so do these people.
Maybe he was one of the high society folk.
Yeah,
I don't think he murdered anybody.
Yeah, these guys are very human, except for when they're feeding and having sex with each other.
So they spend a long time shunting off this human guy.
They do shunt him off.
Yeah, there's a bunch of guys, all of whom are attaching their faces to this guy and feeding off his nutrients and getting really happy, and then also having an orgy at the same time. But we don't see any
It's all very... it's sexual eating.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is... sensual eating.
Yeah, so it's you know, you can see it's influenced by what they would imagine like the equivalent of a Roman orgy would be on some sort of alien planet.
That's exactly, that's how I felt about it. Like, it was very excessive and just very carnal. Right.
Yes.
Yeah, and at this point, everything is lit with red light. Like, the last half hour of the movie is entirely lit with red light.
Yes.
In the same house that was lit normally before, but now it's the setting for the orgy.
Well, yeah, it's the shunting light.
Yeah, it also helps that, like, a lot of the people in this orgy scene are old men wearing underwear, which kind of reminds you of the Roman scenes, which involve old men wearing togas.
There are a lot of old people.
Very simple white garments. So, yeah, so at the end of the terrible shunting off of Blanchard, which causes his death eventually...
Forever. Yeah. Like, this was a torture.
They're shunting the crap out of this guy.
Yeah.
Well, they cut back and forth between that and Billy running upstairs and confronting his parents, which we'll get to that later. Mm-hmm. So, at the end of the shunting of David Blanchard, the judge climbs on top of him.
Yeah. With his cigar.
Yeah. And he says, and now we'll get to the bottom of this.
And he does like a, but he says it in a way, he has his hand up in front of, what's his name? Blanchard?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's moving his fingers around in a way that lets you know getting to the bottom of it means what you think it means.
Yeah.
Because he then, well, Mike, what does he do?
Well, he sticks his hand under the garment of David, through his body, and then up the other end, his hand appears through the guy's mouth.
Yes.
And then he kind of grabs his face, and he doesn't really do anything after that. He just kind of grabs his face like a trophy.
But he's like pulling it off, kind of.
Yeah, they start stretching the skin.
Yeah, and the special effects in general in this movie are amazing, but the face ripping is not.
The close-up face stuff was really bad.
Yeah.
Really bad. But the fisting was believable.
Yeah, so Billy was at this point freed by Clarissa, who the kind of hooker with the heart of gold character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the nerd turns out to be sinister, which is odd, but this slutty girl turns out to be a really good guy. Mm-hmm. Probably the only good guy, other than Milo. Yeah, so she frees him momentarily. He's also running upstairs, and he confronts his parents, pursued by Dr. Cleveland, who turns into another weird anteater-like creature, which we'd never seen that happen before. We just saw people with weird attachments to their face.
Yeah,
he turns into an entire weird creature.
Yeah, he looks like the Joker's father, basically. He gets this weird cut in his face.
It looks like he just smeared his face with lipstick.
Kind of.
Basically, which is what the Joker did.
Yeah.
So then he runs away from Dr. Cleveland, he runs into his parents' room, and this is the point at which his parents also turn into weird creatures.
They're having their own party.
She's still on the bed. And then the mom jumps out of the bed, and instead of legs, she has a man's arms.
Yeah, man's arms, and then she's talking to Billy, and his sister's face appears where her mom's vagina is.
Yeah, it emerges from between her mom's legs.
Yeah, and she says something quippy. I forget
what it was.
Yeah, there are a lot of quips at this point.
Lots of quips.
Because generally the movie is not that funny.
Yeah.
But then at the point where it becomes really disgusting, it also becomes full of quips.
Yeah, they...
which
they,
I guess is standard for a reanimator type movie.
Yeah.
It's like alternating boredom with horror/comedy. Instead of alternating horror with comedy, they do it this way.
Yeah, his parents and his sister at this point are just having fun with him. Like, yeah. they're having fun at his expense.
Yeah, they're just being all wacky. And none is more wacky than his father, who pulls up the bedclothes to reveal his face in his own butt.
Yeah. And he...
So this turns the tables on Billy, who had accused him of being a butthead. How right he was.
Yeah, that's exactly how he appears.
The awkwardness of the line, fuck you, butthead.
Yeah.
Now we understand where that came from.
Yeah. Now it's comedic, because he says, you're right, I am a butthead, because his face is where his butthole should be.
Yeah, so downstairs, we see Pizza the Hut. These people are just melting into each other.
Yeah, so they've wine-dined, and now they're 69-ing.
Yes.
Yeah.
But into each other.
And then Billy challenges Ted, the preppy jock bully guy, who was his sister's fiancé or whatever, to a wrestling match. So then Ted throws him around the room for a while.
Yeah, they go around punching
each other. Yeah, it's very boring. Like, it's very boring in the beginning. Yeah. It got interesting towards the end, though.
It's kind of like a real high school fight where it was just, like, rolling around.
Like, one guy pushes the other guy.
Then he
pushes
pretty much.
And the second guy pushes the first guy.
Yeah.
And then, eventually, Milo and the mother run into the room. It turns out the mother is actually also a good guy, or at least she doesn't do anything to stop good things from
happening. Yeah, I don't think she's good or bad. She's just there.
She's kind of a
brain-dead.
She's a chaotic neutral.
But she is.
But she disrupts the fight enough that Billy can... Well, Ted has let his guard down, because Ted has decided to celebrate his triumph preemptively.
Never do that, guys. No. Never, ever.
By kissing Billy, and then that turns into shunting him.
Like, semi-shunted.
Yeah. But then, Ted gets distracted by everybody barging into the room, and Billy is able to stick his hand up Ted's ass and grab his face inside out.
Yeah, and he ends up, but instead of pulling his face up, Billy fists Ted, grabs his face, and pulls it back down and turns him inside out.
Yeah. Inside out.
And Jenny just looks at that and says, inside out.
and then it turns out that his insides are just worms and like slugs.
Yep. It's the apple.
Yeah,
it's a throwback to the apple worms.
Yeah,
much like in Halloween 3 Season of the Witch, the big evil plot of the monsters is just to have people filled with worms for some reason. And although they are worms, they are making loud insect noises. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're mealworms. I don't know. So then, as soon as he's defeated Ted, it's as if Ted is like the head vampire or something.
Yeah,
Everybody else is just standing there stunned.
Yeah.
They're like, what? What do we do now?
Yeah. And he and Milo and Clarissa run away in a car. Yeah. They're all in the same car for the first time ever, instead of following each other in multiple cars.
And the parents, Billy's parents say, we'll never get away with this. And Billy says, watch me. And then he leaves.
Yeah. Oh, he punched his dad first.
Oh, that's right. That's right. He's like, you'll never get away with this. And then Billy punches his dad and leaves.
Yeah.
And that is the end. That is they leave. The movie ends.
So
this movie.
Yeah. So
that's the whole movie, and it's.
So this time we got through the whole plot in only half an hour.
Ooh.
Nice. Last time it was an hour and 18 minutes. Before that, it was about an hour and.
Have we really been
going
for half an hour now?
Yep.
Wow.
From 4:07 to 4:41 p.m.
All right.
Oh no, I shouldn't have revealed so much information.
What?
Oh my god.
Oh no.
Okay.
Yeah. So
we're gonna get
docked. So now I think we should discuss a few individual scenes in higher detail.
It's kind of hard because there's so much just happened.
Yeah.
It wasn't like...
So much happened. Okay, so can we just discuss...
the party scene.
Yeah, let's talk about this fucking pool party.
Yeah, the pool party.
Which is supposed to be a high school pool party, but I guess they're society people, so it's very fancy. There's a DJ.
They have unlimited money.
There's like an outdoor dance floor.
They invite people by telegrams. That's just waste. You have to call people up, and tell them to install a telegram receiving machine in their house just so they can receive this telegram.
This party is so fancy that the host, the person who threw the party, is actually in a tent in the party.
Yeah, he had
his VIP crew.
Yeah, he's in the VIP area.
It's
which is a party within a party. It's like a white rental tent with one of those flap door entrances.
Yeah. But yeah, he's kind of like a, I don't know, like some sort of chic, nomad.
Well, I think in a lot of like 80s movies, there was this guy like this who was like a tall, preppy guy who was also like a jock, who was also like a bully, like in Less Than Zero, that kind of movie.
Yeah, he's the ultimate everything.
He's kind of like the character The Pin in the movie Brick was kind of based on these guys.
You know what I didn't understand is, in the beginning, Billy, when he's having this debate, right, he's the jock.
Yeah.
He's the guy who's making fun of
the
nerd.
Well, he is sort of a jock. He's supposed to be a basketball star.
But he's also the debate club.
He's kind of your Michael J. Fox type.
Actually, I wrote down, he reminded me of like a Kirk Cameron slash Michael J. Fox type.
But he has Dennis Miller's hair.
Yeah. But the thing is, if he was like a jock on the basketball team, he should have been like a popular guy.
And he shouldn't have been like 9 inches shorter than this Ted Ferguson guy.
And he wasn't a popular guy. No one liked him.
That's because he wasn't actually born into society.
But yet they were all cheering him on when he won the debate. That's so you think you get built up like, oh, Billy's the popular kid.
And yeah, his girlfriend, like the cheerleader, actually introduces him with a cheerleading routine at the debate. And everyone's cheering him.
Like
and
you think, time, oh, he's won it. It's over.
Yeah, like he's the ultimate dude. Like, he comes off as, like, a dude who is really popular. He comes home and tells his parents, oh, yeah, I won, like, the championship, and I won, like, the debate. I'm going to be the president.
As soon as he starts making waves, it all unravels.
Yeah, and then when they get to the beach scene, you find out, oh, wait, he's not getting invited to parties.
Which no is, one like, actually the next him. Scene.
Yeah, they cut to beach scene where he's not a popular guy anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, by the way, jumping again, but beach scene.
Yeah.
The point where he goes to talk to Ted to try and get himself and his girlfriend invited to the party.
Yeah.
He turns around, his girlfriend's gone. He doesn't have any concern. No. She doesn't come back.
No.
He doesn't talk to her until the next day he's at school.
Yeah. No, she's always doing this. Yeah. It goes off in a huff.
Like your girlfriend just disappeared. You don't know where she went.
Yeah.
And you're not gonna be concerned about it. You're gonna go follow Blanchard and listen to this weird tape that he's taken of like your family.
Yeah. Well, he's got Clarissa on the mind, I think. That's true. What's going on.
Yeah, Clarissa.
That's right. Yeah, she squirted all that suntan lotion in his face. Yeah,
that is
true. So he meets her again at the party. I don't remember what she was wearing, but she just looks like
she's wearing a bra.
Character she was wearing in movie. In the '80s.
Like a half jacket.
Yep.
Mid-drip, sleeves, out. Sleeves open and just bra underneath.
In the late 80s, early 90s, you could just wear a bra because they would call it a bustier. And it was totally legit just to wear that around as though you're wearing a shirt.
Like the normal excrescences of lace that were around all the edges of excessive lingerie at the time just got bigger and bigger until they became an entire garment.
Yeah. Yep.
So she meets him at the party. She says, "Where's Shauna?" She says, "That is who you go with, right?" That's kind of old-fashioned terminology, I think.
Well, I don't think it's too old fashioned. Because before, like I was thinking, like in the 50s, 60s, whatever, they would say "go steady."
Yeah.
And so I feel like "go with" is the natural sort of like progression of language. So,
all I'm saying is that's what my mom says.
Mm. Well, your mom was that age in the '80s, right?
Oh, this is
okay. No, Mike. When were you born? Let's get into this. When?
So this is who you go with, right? And then Milo immediately accuses her of turning tricks. Boy, I don't know where that came from.
Yeah, Milo is very angry at this woman for no reason.
Well, he's a rebel. He had like 3 patches on his jacket.
Yeah.
Milo's probably my favorite character. He was steady throughout the whole movie.
He was the most sensible
guy.
He was the most like normal
Instead
person.
Instead of barging in and confronting Billy's parents like 5 or 10 times over the course of a single day, Billy did, he took his time to observe what was going on.
Yeah, Billy just acted on, like, he just did the first thing that came to mind every time. Yeah. He put no thought into any action that he took in this movie.
Hoops don't mess around, man.
No.
See? That's Bill's Jeep. It is. I can't believe he would do this to me.
Oh, come on, Shauna. It's better you find out now rather than later, right?
Wrong.
God, what a bitch that Clarissa Carlin is. Can you imagine what's going on?
All right, all right.
You remember the first hint that something's a little bit wrong?
You mean when he discovers the pulsating thing on his sister's back?
No, the back boobs.
Oh, that was a little later.
A little bit later. But he walks in on his sister because he's looking for suntan lotion.
In the shower.
Yeah.
But he walks into the bathroom, which is a cavernous bathroom with shelves everywhere. Yeah. There's a vestibule in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Walks closer and closer into the bathroom, and then he sees her through the shower window.
Yeah. And he can see her ass.
Yeah.
But he can also see her boobs, which is confusing.
And it's also confusing because the boobs he sees are about 10 times bigger than his sister's actual boobs, which we saw in an earlier scene. We didn't see them, but we saw her wearing a nightgown.
Yeah. So he freaks out, and then she opens up, you know, the glass door to the shower, and she's like, "What's your problem?"
Yeah.
Basically.
Billy!
Yeah.
What's wrong with you?
Yeah. Which, I mean, what is wrong with you? You see your sister, you probably wouldn't...
Yeah. Why did
just stand
like,
there.
Keep looking?
Yeah.
I don't think I would have looked long enough to even notice that she had back boobs. Yeah. I would have just been like, suntan lotion, I'm gonna
leave. Yeah.
And once he sees the back boobs, it then opens the sliding glass door. But then she's back to normal. And this is the exact same thing that happens when he's making out with Carissa later. And he notices that her torso is rotated 180 degrees from her legs and abdomen.
Yeah.
This is the contortionist species.
But the next scene, she's back to normal. Is he seeing things? Is he some sort of weirdo?
Yeah, I
is
thought...
Is he even a member of the Albacore Club?
The yeah. Albacore Club.
For the beach that he goes to.
The classiest of all fish, the tuna. Yes.
Yeah.
The entire time, I kept thinking that a better title for the movie would have been Billy Has a Brain Tumor. Because that's kind of how it's like, he's kind of constantly seeing things, and then he, like, does a double take, and it's not the thing that he was seeing before.
Yeah.
Like, the entire time.
Yeah.
I mean, warranted, yeah. but the way that he acted it out was so, like, it seemed like other things were wrong with him, other than being paranoid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking that, like, a lot of this movie would have seemed more natural if it was a Japanese horror movie. Like,
probably.
There's several inexplicable things that happen. Most prominently, the woman handing the guy the hairball.
Yeah.
So I was thinking that if this movie was called, like, Kanakiri Kata 2, Part 1, Kanakiri Kata Metal Man, or something, it would have been a lot more appropriate. Even though there were no metal men in it, we could explain that that was some kind of symbolic thing.
Yeah.
It could also have been called Eat the Rich 2, Eaten by the Rich.
Yes.
Because Eat the Rich is a phrase. I don't think there was ever a movie called Eat the Rich. There might have been. But anyway, this definitely has the appearance of a sequel-type movie about it, especially being directed by Brian Yuzna, who also directed, like,
if it was a
Slumber
sequel,
Party Massacre 4, Puppet Master 4, all those types of movies.
If it was a sequel, though, it should have been called Society 2, Your Mom's a Shunt.
The Shunting.
The Shunting. The Shunting.
Yeah. So, in general, you know, as we said, we're not... You know, this is not really a bad movie.
No, and it was enjoyable. Like, you cared only because it was so curious the entire time. Yeah, like, what... You want to know why things are happening, but the thing is, it never gets explained.
Yeah, you want the resolution, and you're engaged in that far, but there's nothing...
It doesn't actually deliver.
Yeah. I feel like that was the main issue with the movie in general, was just that the way they went about explaining the story could have been done better. I feel like they should have plotted some of that whole shunting stuff a little earlier and let it kind of develop and build rather than just, like, throwing it all at you in the last act.
But
at the same time, like, basically the conspiracy is revealed, like, 20 minutes into the movie.
Yeah.
And then the whole time is spent, like, thinking, oh boy, when we actually see this happen, it's going to be really weird.
Yeah, but
I wanted to know more about, like, what these monsters were, where they came from. Yeah. I wanted some background on them.
Yeah.
You don't really know
anything.
You don't
get any background on that. You know, basically, all it is, you know, social commentary.
There's no world building.
Rich poor divide.
Yeah.
Like, this is obviously, like, a different universe. There's
the universe where they have telegrams in the 80s.
Yeah. And there's no building on, like, what are the confines? Like, what are the rules of that? This is what it is. Uh-huh. Just accept it. That they're, like, high society people who shunt. And then have an orgy afterwards.
Yeah.
And it was just a lot to accept. it was a whole lot to accept.
I almost, respect it for not providing any sort of backstory.
Really?
There's no like, you know, we've been doing this for 450 years. Leonardo da Vinci was a shunter. Queen Elizabeth was a shunter. There's no context whatsoever. Yeah. The entire movie takes place in, like, what appears to be one block of Beverly Hills.
Yes.
Yeah.
So when he drives away at the end, you could actually imagine that he's driving to a place where there aren't lots of aliens going around killing people.
And it's not so much that, like, I want to know where they came from. It's just, like, we don't really know anything about them.
Nothing.
It's just, like, they just show up and they suck on people.
And they, for some reason, while they're made of slugs and worms, they also like eating them.
That's right. Yeah.
There's
that one
scene in the beginning where Billy's...
During the, like, third of the 25 times when he runs back to the house to confront his parents, he sees his parents, like, laughing their fool heads off in the garden looking
at
some slugs.
Yeah, because the gardener has, like, a bunch of slugs on a plate and... with a chopstick, like chopsticks, and he's showing them these slugs, and they're, like, really proud of, like, they're like, oh, this is our best batch yet, and they look like they want to eat them, but then Billy walks up, and then they're, like, very annoyed that he's even there.
You're, like, ruining our slug moment.
The thing is, like, haven't they been acting like that for his entire life?
Yeah.
It's like he's just barely picking
up. Getting upset about now.
Well, I think he's picking up on it. I don't even...
Maybe the whole coming out thing? I don't know what
maybe
that's
it's
about.
It's all about his sister's party.
The recording... Yeah. Hearing the recording was the catalyst for, like, everything that happened. Like, him investigating.
Yeah, because, like, also, like, coincidentally, the day that he goes into school and starts telling people, I think I was adopted.
Yeah.
Like, what tipped you off?
Yeah. There's very little about, like, the adoption thing, too. Yeah. Clarissa makes a joke about it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he says, what do you know about my mother?
Like, your real mom or your adopted one?
Ooh,
burn.
Yeah, Clarissa is an interesting character. If there had been a sequel to this movie, it would have been about her.
Yeah, she has a lot of, like, one-liners that I don't know what the context of them are at all. Like, there's no, like, there was a conversation that happened in her head, and then she said this line. Like, the line is, like, out of nowhere. I don't know.
Yeah, her character is basically the hot babe.
Yeah.
She says a lot of things that make you say, like, wow, she's socially awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, she might have autism.
Or her mother is weird in some way. We never see her
father. Yeah, she might be on the spectrum, or... I mean, her mom is weird, so...
Yeah.
Who knows?
Clarissa explains the shunting.
Yeah, she could have explained
the sequel. Clarissa explains the shunting.
And I guess it explains she's a little bit off. That's why she likes Billy so much.
Yeah, she's not attracted to her own kind.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was also weird how, like, I feel like they have some control over how they morph or whatever that is, right?
Yeah.
After her and Billy had sex earlier in the movie, she obviously did that whole contortion thing.
Yeah, she was trying to see if he was into it.
Like, show, yeah. I don't know if she was trying to feel him out to see if he was part of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if what that was all about.
Yeah, if he was, like, down.
But it was just kind of weird where, like, if she's so, like, kind of on the fence about her whole species or race or whatever you want to call it, like, why would she just throw that out there? You think that she'd be a little bit more secretive about it?
It was kind of subtle because she switched back without him.
Yeah.
She was like, oh, maybe I made a mistake.
And also, it seems as though the contorting and, like, their body is just doing whatever their bodies want to do because they're sort of just, like, liquid.
Okay. So you think, like, they have their own mind of its own type of thing?
No, I think that they have control of it. But it seems like there's a lot of pleasure taken in the contortion element of it. Like, they seem to really get off on the contortion and, like, blending into each other and making, like, different shapes.
Yeah.
So maybe she can't fight the fact that she really likes contorting.
Yeah.
it could be one of those things.
Yeah, because at the end of the movie, it ends up being, like, this mass orgy blob of, like...
Yeah, it's like this blob, but, like, not a, like, a rounded blob.
No,
it's like people, like, are connected by projections of flesh that go through the air. It's like how the way cells interact, under a microscope.
Yes.
Yes.
It's like amoebas sending out projections to collect food from whatever it is they're picking up.
Yeah.
It's like an allegory for life and molecules and how we're all just molecules passing through each other.
Ships in the night.
Ships in the night.
Catchers in the rye. Okay, so...
Lords and the Flies.
Bill Lindsay, what did you think about the clothes in this movie?
The clothes of it?
I mean, in terms of the... No, the clothing.
No, the clothes... I was like, the clothes of it.
The clothes of it.
No, we know the clothes. The clothing is...
Well, the clothes... clothing from, like, the late 80s, early 90s are, like, losing sort of, like, nostalgic appeal because it just looks like modern-day clothing, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it just... Like, people dress like this.
Even the denim dress.
Except for some things, like the denim dress and then...
Like, that's a little too full-on, but I do see acid wash a lot in ladies' stores.
Yeah, it's a little bit toned down now.
It is.
But there's a lot of...
They'll do a little bit of it.
There's a lot of throwbacks going on.
Yeah.
Like the high-waisted things, like that's kind of making
a big thing. Like the spandex dresses are like a big thing.
What about the bikini? What about the bikinis where the hip part of the bikini goes like halfway up the torso?
Those, you know what? Those bikinis, the cuts from the 80s and 90s for like underwears for women.
Lingerie
and bikinis, they will never come back.
No, it was terrible.
I don't know why they were ever a thing because it made... Like, even fit women look fat and ugly.
I think it was David Lee Roth's fault.
Really? Let's trace this back.
I mean, if you look at the videos for all these... You know, I was thinking of the video for David Lee Roth's California Girls. Like, did that...
Okay.
I feel like after that was the ideal female form for dumb people for, like, 5 years after that one David Lee Roth video. I don't know what preceded that. I don't know if the Swedish Bikini Team was earlier or later. Or Spuds McKenzie, the original party animal. But
yeah.
You know, that whole movement, I think without David Lee Roth, it would have advanced in a completely different direction.
You think so?
Thanks, David.
It was kind of his notion of glamour versus Prince's notion of glamour out there.
Oh, yeah.
And I liked when Billy was wearing that black shirt with the gray tie.
Oh, yeah. Well, that whole outfit was nice. That outfit, because the tie matched the pants, exactly. Yeah. It's like it was made out of the same material.
Yeah, they were both kind of shiny and kind of two shades of gray.
Yeah, and at this point in the movie, when he was wearing the black shirt and the gray pants with the gray tie, he was floating in between looking like David Copperfield and Emilio Estevez.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was really great. I really enjoyed that part of the movie.
Billy easily could have been like the third Estevez.
Yeah, this actor
really could.
Charlie Sheen's brother.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he was definitely like, Billy Estevez.
Yeah.
The actor Billy Warlock went on to basically be a soap opera actor.
Yeah.
That
and
makes
he sounded
sense.
His voice sounded like Kevin Connolly. I don't know if you ever heard of him.
You know who I thought?
The whole time I was like hearing him talk, I'm like, oh man, that's Kevin
Connolly. Is that fat guy from The State?
No,
he's
E on Entourage.
Yep.
Oh.
And then I'm trying to remember what else he's done. That's probably what he's most famous for.
You know what? It sounded like him, but the entire time I thought it sounded like Steve from Sex and the City, who has The only other movie I know him from is he was in like Cats and Dogs, and he played like a dog or something like that.
But anyway,
he sounds like Kevin Connolly, so okay. That's a much better reference. Okay. I'm just letting everybody know that I had a much worse reference in my head. Yeah. Well, I think the ladies will know.
For all the ladies out there.
For all the people who haven't listened to this podcast or who aren't listening right now.
Yeah, so the casting in this movie is pretty much on the nose. Like, he is your Michael J. Fox character.
He is.
Mm-hmm. He looks like Michael J. Fox, sort of. He's by which I mean he's shorter than all the other men in the movie, and yet very confident.
No one calls him Chicken, so that's good.
Yeah, his friend Milo is kind of...
He gets called a bastard.
He has curly hair.
Thing is, Milo is, like, his friend, but they, like, but he's not, like, they're not close friends.
No.
Like, they must have something in common. Billy, well, they're both on the basketball
team. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But other than that, like, they're not... Like,
Billy's
Billy
kind of a loner. He doesn't really... I mean, he had his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And at the beginning, you feel like he's got a lot of friends with all the cheering
and
stuff.
Well, he's dealing with a lot of mental health issues, so...
His best friend's a psychiatrist.
I think that's true.
Yeah, so girlfriend
his psychiatrist with the celery and carrots on his desk.
Have some celery.
He has a bowl of fruit for his patients, which looked like Billy took an onion out of it.
It did.
Chomping into it.
And then the onion was full of
worms. And the look on his face reinforced the idea that this was an onion. But then it turned out that this was actually because of an apple filled with bugs and worms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then later on, when he was in the psychiatrist's office and he was kind of more on top of the world, he chomped into another apple.
Yeah. And but he was very excited about that.
And
apple.
He just, like, nodded furiously, like, in response to that apple.
Like, he was like, yeah.
Fuck yeah, no worms.
Life's going good.
Yeah.
No worms.
The morgue? He isn't dead. He just got here.
Well, I'm sorry.
No. You're not sorry. There's been a mistake.
We didn't actually go into when Clarissa first made an appearance because that was awesome. It was during the first debate.
That's right.
And
correct.
He was, Milo asked a question about
uniforms. The moderator.
Mm-hmm. And Billy had been doing really, really well this entire time. This debate, he was like fucking
killing it.
Yeah. He was smarming it up. He was letting that nerd have it.
Everybody was like cheering him on. He was like cool guy. He was like popular. Mm-hmm. And so Milo asked this question about the uniforms. And all of a sudden, Clarissa is out. She's in the front of the audience. And she does, uncrosses her legs in her short dress. And what is that movie? I'm blanking
Basic Instinct.
She does the Basic Instinct on
She seems to be wearing, like, black hot pants underneath.
Yeah.
You don't see vagina.
No.
He was getting very...
Yeah, but he was just
very excited. He was popping a high one.
He was popping a high one, and then... Also, it was, like, controlling his mind. Like, she was doing, like, a mind control thing with her vagina.
Yeah.
And he was like, no, we should have uniforms. And then all of a sudden, the crowd just...
good. The gun is evil.
Yeah. Like, the crowd just turns on him because he's like, no, uniforms are good for everybody. Because her vagina's out.
Well,
and then
her thighs are out.
Yeah, her thighs are out. Yeah. And then and then she closes them back up.
His girlfriend's looking at him from the audience going,
and she slams a book hard enough for him to, like, snap out of it, and then Clarissa disappears.
Yeah, they're gone.
Yeah, so then Milo says, you gotta watch out for her.
Yeah, she's a bad one.
She's a bad one. Yeah, something to that effect.
In the middle of the debate, I guess it was
that
obvious.
He does the whole, like, cover the mic thing. He's like, you gotta watch out for her.
But then it turns out that Milo and Clarissa are the only two people in town who aren't in on the conspiracy.
Guys, do you think that Milo and Clarissa maybe have a past? Because I feel like there's, like, tension there.
Yeah.
That's probably why he's calling her a hooker.
Yeah, that's true, huh?
And that's why he's, like, warning. Because why else would he know anything about Clarissa?
That's right. They're oddly confrontational to each
other. They are.
For,
like,
the only two people that Billy can trust.
Yeah.
I can't be in the same room with these two people. But they're the only two people who like me.
The entire time I was trying to think, well, towards the end, I was like, what was the whole point of this movie? Other than, I know you're saying that there's a social aspect to it.
Yeah.
The actors themselves say... Don't you realize it? This is how the rich and the poor interact.
Yeah, it's definitely there. Whether it's well done or not is left to be
although kind of like a snow.
You know what I took away?
Yeah.
I took away that rich or poor people have problems. that was like, because he was super rich, he had like a sweet car, like a car that I would like to have today.
He has a Jeep Wrangler.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a Corvette.
Yeah, but like everybody has like cool cars, but he has a ton of problems. Even though he's like super well off, he has nothing to worry about other than his... You know, family, like, home raising him to eat him later.
Yeah, he's basically in a Hansel and Gretel scenario.
Yeah,
although he's not been fattened up, he's in good shape.
But what do you think the point was for this family to take in this bastard and raise him as their own child for almost 18 years?
Yeah, just to wait until his sister's coming out party, which I guess was also when she turned 18.
Yeah, that's a really weird long term sort of plan
to
have.
Yeah.
Are they like, all? Is every family doing this? Adopting these urchins?
Because they just did it special. They talked about it little bit at the party.
They did it as a treat.
You know, a special treat.
Yeah, back in the Gilded Age, you know, the rich would try to outdo each other, you know, with like the black and white party and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Like, this party has fountains of molten gold. This party has bigger fountains of molten gold and molten lava. So this time they come up with a new idea. Not only are they going to sacrifice a normal human, they're going to sacrifice one that they've been preparing for this moment for over
it's
a
like
decade.
It's like someone got like a little like a pig and raised it, you know, and just had it in their house as a pet.
Yeah, but he's had a pretty good life. You know, he's not like in a veal crate.
No. He's free range.
Yeah, but now it's all going to end for him.
Yeah.
He's going to be shunted.
My whole thing was just like, I didn't understand when they went to Blanchard, the governor guy?
No, Blanchard was the governor was telling him the secret.
So afterwards, the governor,
the judge.
Yeah. The judge has Blanchard's beauty mark on his face.
That's right. He assimilated.
So
his
powers. Are they like? Is that what they're doing? Are they like stripping of the youth, or are they stripping of like their knowledge? Are they like what are they gaining? Yeah, because that transfers the mole. Like you got to feel something else is coming.
Yeah, now it's like Wilfred Owen. You know, the First World War poem. So rich cut down the flower of the youth to fulfill their own selfish goals.
Well, because it's not like they're actually like eating him in a way.
They're sucking the life out of him. What happened to him? Did he end up being like an empty skin or what?
Well, yeah
I don't know.
It seemed like he just became
Was that him turning into Pizza the Hut?
Yeah. That's what I'm like. I wonder if they just straight sucked him in and they absorbed him. Like if there's no trace of him. Because I mean, after they all went back to normal human looking forms, I don't remember seeing a mass or anything over there.
And the thing is, when Billy turned Ted inside out, like the inside, there were no bones or anything. Yeah. It was just the skin and then worms.
Yeah.
So these people are there's nothing holding them together.
Yeah.
Like there's no structure in there.
Yeah. They're
there's no muscle.
Which brings me back to like the whole slug thing. Like maybe they're slug people.
Yeah, they're simple organisms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like
they're multi-slugged organisms.
But they're just shape-shifting.
They can be like gastropods, but they also have this shape-shifting ability.
Yeah.
So if I guess this, the moral of the story is that if slugs evolved into humans, they'd be really awful human beings.
Yeah. Rich people are weirdos.
Yeah, rich people are weird. They're eccentric. Have weird taste.
Wow, your boobs look totally sexy. Guys are gonna pop high ones the second they see you.
I'm a little nervous though.
It's fine. Oh, relax, Jenny. Just go with it.
This movie came out of nowhere. The director, Brian Yosna, this was his first directorial effort. And he then later went on to make a whole bunch of gross pseudo-horror comedy movies, like Silent Night, Deadly Night 5, and Bride of Reanimator.
Oh.
And he probably was most successful for his minor role in writing, in coming up with a story and being a producer on Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Oh, nice.
So much
that was like the height of his career. I'm really sticking to the idea that this was just a vehicle for the special effects artist to do his work. Like, I think they worked around, like, he's like, I want to do these kinds of things. And they're like, we'll build a story around it.
Yeah, it's very plausible.
The special effects artist was better known than the director or anyone else involved in the film at the time. Because he was known for his role in Predator and also Nightmare on Elm Street 4 at the time. And I think the original Reanimator movie, too.
You know, one thing that, going back to the sex scene with Billy, Clarissa, one thing that really, really bothered me, and I don't know why, but he was, like, soaking wet. She brought him back home to her place, and he's sitting on her, like, satin sheets, soaking wet. It just bothered the hell out of me. It's like you were ruining these sheets.
But are satin sheets ruined by that?
I don't know. I felt like it would be.
It's not like suede.
Yeah.
So generally, this movie is pretty popular among bad movie fans. I mean, it's hardly a bad movie at all. What it is a cult movie.
Yeah, it's a cult movie.
Yeah, there are tons and tons of websites have written about this movie. And generally, they say it generally achieves its goals.
I could get behind that. It wasn't so terrible. It was just so weird.
And it was out there.
It wasn't terrible in the fact that you didn't want to watch it. Yeah. Like it was just terrible in the fact that it was just didn't make sense.
But the facts are that this movie is out of print on DVD. At Amazon, the cheapest DVD is, I think, $38.95. It was in print for most of the 21st century, but now it's out of print again. No Blu-ray. VHSs, I think, are even more expensive. But this movie is in its entirety on YouTube, so that's how we watched it.
Yeah,
so,
I don't know.
So I think I've come up with five things that the movie was trying to accomplish, and I want each of you to give your impromptu ratings on those things.
Ah.
Because if... I've learned nothing else, is that you should have some sort of data, even if it's nonsensical data, which you can then go back and correlate against other things.
Yeah.
Okay, so first of all, on a scale of 0 to 5, how would you rate the acting?
Acting?
Faster.
Sorry. I would rate it...
I give it a 3.
I was going to say 2.
Yeah, 2 out of 5 slugs.
Yeah, most of the actors, I think, are kind of embody the role they were supposed to play.
Yeah, they're some pulled it off a little bit better.
They're not very charismatic.
Yeah, they're not. Like, I mean, it's just standard. It's standard acting.
Hardly any of the actors ever went on to anything more significant.
Yeah.
Yeah, what about this movie in terms of special effects?
4.5, I'll say. Because I've seen better. Maybe 4.
You've seen better in a movie from 1989.
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a real independent
and maybe not better, but just the fact that I've seen other overall movies pull off the special effects better.
I think the
cinematography and the lighting was better. It might have been a little bit more believable.
Yeah, during the scene at the end, everything was just lit red.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
The skin was all exactly the same shade. Yeah.
So I think maybe it might have been on par or even better than other special effects, but it just didn't look as good because of the way it was presented on film.
Yeah, I would think that they probably didn't have a very good lighting guy, because it was very flat. The lighting was extremely flat the entire time.
Yeah, so I can't give it a 5 because of the faces being ripped off. Yeah. They just looked like they were made of clay. They looked like Wallace and Gromit. I'll give it a 4.
Yeah.
Okay, what about in terms of big ideas and social commentary?
I'm giving it a 0, because... I call BS on the whole idea that they were trying to make any sort of social commentary with this.
They explain it many times.
I know.
Characters say it to the camera.
But, the overall movie,
I think it had a small idea, not so much a big idea.
Yeah. The idea was so small that it was like, it was not...
It was so done before.
Yes, and it had nothing to do with what actually happened in the movie.
I'll give it a whopping 2 out of 5.
Yeah, because I was going to give it a 2 as well.
Yeah, I do respect how, it doesn't try to explain everything. It just creates this world. And it says, this world is not so different from our world, is it? Okay, what about in terms of clothing? I loved the clothing. I will give the clothing a 3.5.
I'll give it a 2 just because of the crappy lingerie and stuff that just was distasteful in my eyes.
You know what, I'm going to give it a 4 just to... just because of, this is not clothing, but the furniture that was in Clarissa's home.
Oh, yeah.
Because I loved her furniture.
Their entire room furniture was clothing. These purple...
Furniture cloths.
Various purple sofas, which looked like giant catcher's mitts, sort of.
They're amazing.
And she
seashells.
And she had a lot of ivy decorations in there.
Yeah.
Ivory.
Ivory.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's
like tusks.
Yeah, gigantic tusks. I would live in that house.
How did you think the movie succeeded at having its main character resemble Michael J. Fox?
I would give that 4.5.
I'm going to say 2 because I didn't even think of it until you guys said it.
Really?
That was one of my first things I wrote down.
My brain went in a completely other direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think he did a good job for somebody who doesn't look at all like Michael J. Fox, so
okay.
I'll give it a 3.
I feel like when they cast this movie, they told all the agents and stuff, we want a Michael J. Fox type guy. I feel like that probably was the case.
And it helps if his last name is Warlock.
Yeah. No relation to Warlord.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
We got a war theme going here.
Yeah. Yeah, Corbin Burnson, not in this movie. He was the secret theme to our past two episodes.
Yeah, it turns out that if you try to do a podcast devoted entirely to Corbin Burnson movies, you end up with a lot of erotic thrillers. Kind of like doing Jan Michael Vincent movies.
Yeah.
So we're going to try to steer away from that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think Society was a movie that a lot of people should watch if you want to watch weird people interacting with each other in a disgusting way.
Yeah. If you like special effects, like practical special effects, if you enjoy those, you'll enjoy this movie.
Yeah. If you like weird movies and or want to trip on acid or something and get high and watch a weird-ass movie,
this is probably the movie for you.
And it would all make sense if it was a Japanese movie.
I would have bought it hook, like, line, and sinker if it was a Japanese movie.
Yeah, it didn't have the kind of art background that a lot of
Japanese movies
have.
It needed that artsy element to it, but it was just a cheesy, cheap 80s
campy
horror.
Yeah. To me, that's a lot of it. What it was, the editing was weird, and I think if there would have been more put into the story and more put into the actual look of it, it probably would have succeeded a little bit better.
If you enjoyed Takashi Miike's Gozu, but you wish it had, it starred stereotypical 80s teens, you should check out Society.
I think that's our podcast.
Yay.
Cool.
Woo woo!
I do love the smell of the hunt and the taste
of the shunt.